from E-Town Hall in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. It's E-Town with this week's guests from Nashville, Tennessee, Marty Stewart and his fabulous superlatives. Author and environmental educator, Michael Kotis. And from New York City, Cassandra Jenkins. I'm Helen Forster. Join me now in welcoming our host, Nick Forster.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks, everybody. Welcome to E-Town Hall. So glad you could be with us this week. We have our usual mix, our variety of ages and musical styles, and some great opportunity to have some conversation about the natural world, all that stuff that you've come to know and love about E-Town. But this week is, in fact, the first time in our many-year history that we've been able to welcome our friend Marty Stewart and his band to E-Town. So we're excited about that. Marty has been at this whole music game for quite a long time, all his life. He never really looked back, starting when he was a little kid in Philadelphia, Mississippi, that is. His story is really amazing, and it kind of touches on all the music that I love and have been inspired by throughout my life. We'll talk more about all that stuff in a little while, but briefly, I'll just tell you that Marty grew up dreaming of making music. By the time he was 14, he was a full-time member of bluegrass legend Lester Flatt's band Nashville Grass. At 21, he made his first solo record. At 22, he joined Johnny Cash's band. He kept making records, and in his early 30s, he had his first gold record. He was asked to become a member of the Grand Ole Opry. He's been busy ever since. He's married to his teenage crush. He's a country music legend in a modern way, and he really continues to make music and win awards left and right. And in the middle of all that, he's found time to connect with and support the Lakota Sioux, especially in Pine Ridge, where he was yesterday. He's got a brand new record called Way Out West, and he's here with his band. Please welcome, for their first visit to E-Town, Marty Stewart and his fabulous Superlatives.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Honored to be here.
Bright moon is shining down on the desert sand. Well, I reached down, touched the earth, held it in my hand. As the dirt fell through my fingers, the wind it seemed to say, don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today. Cause time don't wait on nobody. Time don't wait on nobody. Time don't wait on nobody. It just keeps moving on. Time don't wait on nobody. Time don't wait on nobody. Time don't wait on nobody. It just keeps moving on. And on, and on, and on. And angels dropped matches that lit up the desert sky. A pillar of fire from east to west came slowly drifting by. Well, a voice from the cloud like thunder said, start looking for a ride to where yesterday meets tomorrow. That'll get you to the other side. Have a second. We're time to wait on nobody. Time to wait on nobody. Time to wait on nobody. It just keeps moving on. Time to wait on nobody. Time to wait on nobody. Time to wait on nobody. It just keeps moving on. And on,
Thank you very much. It is indeed an honor to be here. In my view, this show is an American treasure. It is something to be treasured in this nation. Yeah. Thank you, Nick. One of the influences in this record undoubtedly was Marty Robbins, a record he did called Gunfighter Ballads. And so this song I wrote, but I have to tip my hat to Marty Robbins. And I've got me a feeling won't be seeing it tonight. But I'll ride on as fast as I can go. Freedom waits for me in old Mexico. Well, there's a pretty senorita waiting there with mysterious eyes and wavy black hair. She always welcomes me to her door. Love's on the line in old Mexico. Well, it's a place where I'm not wanted. There's no price on my head. I can live and breathe and come back from the dead. Shadows are friendly. Friends, well, I've got many. As far as I know, in old Mexico, oh, oh, oh. Hey. Well, if you ever steal some gold from the red, white, and blue, they've got an army of soldiers they'll be sending after you. Well, those government horses sure ain't slow. They can run all the way to old Mexico. Well, it's a place where I'm not wanted. There's no price on my head. I can live and breathe and come back from the dead. The shadows are friendly. Friends, well, I've got many. As far as I know, in old Mexico, in old Mexico, in old Mexico, oh, oh. Ow.
What a sound, what a band. Marty, so glad you're here. Marty Stewart, welcome. And what an amazing journey you've had. I touched on some of the early stuff, but I wonder, was there a time when you were a kid that you heard a song on the radio or you went to a show or you heard something that just made you go, okay, that's it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to play music for the rest of my life.
Johnny Cash came to the Coliseum in Jackson, Mississippi. I think it was in 1970. And my mom took me and my sister to see that show. And when he walked out on stage and said, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," that was it. I was like, "I'm in. That's wow. What I'm going to do."
Wow, wow.
My mom was a very astute business gal. And so she said, "You need to learn to be responsible." So she co-signed a loan with me for my first Fender guitar. And I had to cut yards that summer to pay for it. And I sold Hallmark greeting cards up and down the road. But that's how I paid it off.
Yeah. Yeah. So she taught you a lesson.
Yeah.
Now, I understand there was a scene that you, one of your early records was about the Busy Bee Cafe. What was that place like?
My town was a wonderful place in the South to grow up, and I loved Philadelphia, still do. But you might remember 1964, that's where the three civil rights workers were murdered. And the world just turned upside down, and the whole town was judged by, you know, a handful of racists and radicals. But that was not the Philadelphia that I knew. But in my opinion, the coolest place in that town was this place called the Busy Bee Cafe. And it was a black-owned establishment, but it was a shoeshine parlor. It was a juke joint, and it was a cafe. And I thought the guys that hung out there were the coolest guys in town. They dressed like about like we do now. And And some of them had gold teeth, and that was my goal in life at that point, was to look like those guys and have a gold tooth. So the Busy Bee Cafe was, it kind of made an indelible mark on me.
How did you meet Roland White?
On the bluegrass circuit, that's where I met you. The bluegrass music circuit, as you know, is one of the greatest places in the world to get your wheels up and to get to know people. Roland was in Lester Flatt's band when I was working with the Sullivan Family Gospel Singers. And he was very approachable. He, you know, was very kind to me. He gave me a mandolin pick, one of his scarves. And but what he really gave me was his phone number and said, sometimes, you know, if you ever get a chance, talk to your mom and dad. I'll talk to Lester. Maybe you could ride along with us for a weekend or something.
And let me just let people know that Roland White had been in a band called the Kentucky Colonels. That was a really important sort of seminal, really one of the first sort of young kids playing bluegrass in a new way. And he and his brother Clarence were just kind of changing people's minds and hearts and blowing their minds. And here he was playing in Lester's band and giving you his phone number.
That's right. And after touring with the Sullivan Family, I was like 12. Our circuit that summer was like bluegrass festivals, revival meetings, and George Wallace campaign rallies. But that summer I discovered applause, and I could stay up all night and talk about music 24 hours a day and hang out with people like you that were cool and just, you know, had a bohemian lifestyle and girls, and I got paid a little bit for it. And when it came time to go to school, I was a pitiful excuse for a student. And I felt like the circus had dropped me off at the edge of town, you know. And so I got kicked out of school about a week in, and I called Roland. I said, man, this would be a good time to call. And so it worked out that I could go up for the weekend and turn into a career.
Yeah, and that was when you were 14 or
13.
13.
Yeah.
And your parents basically handed you to Roland White and said, okay, here's our boy, look out for him. He's now on a bus traveling with a bunch of experienced, wizened veterans, and you're out there. You know, he was your minder, kind of, wasn't he?
I don't think it would have worked out with the Ozzy Osbourne band. Yeah. You know, but Lester was like a country preacher of sorts, you know, and so the reality sunk in after a couple of weeks. They had a meeting, my folks in Lester Flatt, and my sister was there. They talked about how would you finish your schoolwork. You know, your money goes back to Mississippi. You get to keep enough to live on. Here's how much you get paid at the Grand Ole Opry. Here's how much you pay for recording sessions. It was laid out pretty straight.
Wow.
And so I told Lester, I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll be back next Thursday. He says, no, we go to work tomorrow morning. And so there was a long road out of that bluegrass festival. My mom and dad's car was in front. And when it came to the main road, my mom and dad's car went this way and our bus went that way. I went, whoa, I got the job. It's heavy.
So what do most people not know about Lester Flatt that you learned in those years when you were in that band?
Well, I didn't know. I thought he probably went to Harvard or something. But Lester had a third grade education. And what I learned was he was the wisest man I've ever worked with. I learned the difference in wisdom and school knowledge sometimes. There is a difference.
Yeah.
They both exist. That's the best. But his principles of life, his principles of show business have carried me, you know, for 45 years now.
Yeah.
He's never been wrong.
Yeah. And so after that, next stop pretty shortly thereafter was Johnny Cash's band.
Yeah. Well, Lester had passed away, and I needed a job. And nobody in bluegrass music needed, you know, a musician at that time. And so I went into a guitar store in Nashville called the Old Time Pick and Parlor. Remember that place?
Yeah.
And there was a guy named Danny Farrington, who was a luthier.
Yeah. Guitar
building
builder.
A really fancy black guitar. And I said, who's that for? He said, Johnny Cash. I went, I want to go with you to meet Johnny Cash when you deliver that guitar. And when the day came, we went to Cowboy Jack Clement's studio in Nashville. And I didn't know it when the door swung open. I met two lifelong friends. The first time I ever laid eyes on him, Cowboy Jack Clement, who was a great record producer at Sun Records, was dancing with a martini on his head, and Johnny Cash was singing the Wabash Cannonball. And I thought, all right, I can hang out here. My kind of people. And I was introduced, and John stood up, and he stuck out his hand and said, what's your name? I said, Marty Stewart. He said, where are you from? I said, Mississippi. He said, I thought so. He said, where you been? I said, getting ready. He said, all right. And we hung out all day, and about 2 or 3 weeks later, I got a call, and they said, John wants you to come to work with us. And so I didn't audition. I just showed up and started playing.
Wow. In case you just tuned in, you're listening to E-Town. I'm here with Marty Stewart. Tell me what you told your mom when you were a teenager and you went to a Connie Smith show.
Connie Smith, my wife, legendary country singer. She was Mama's favorite singer. She came to the Choctaw Indian Fair in my hometown in 1970. And that was a big day for us. And my sister and me, we couldn't sleep at night waiting for her to come to town. And I had my mom take me to the sewerage department store that day and buy me a yellow shirt so Connie Smith would notice me. And
how old were you at the time?
12.
12, yeah.
And you got to dream big, folks. So at the end of the concert, we went down onto the football field where she had sung. And me and my sister Jennifer, we got our picture made with Connie. I got her autograph. And she didn't notice me. And I asked my mom if I could borrow her camera. And I went back and found Connie and said, "Miss Smith, can I take your picture?" She said, "Sure." And so that was the first picture I ever took in my life. And on the way home that night, I said, "I'm going to marry Connie Smith one day." And this past Sunday, we just celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary. Why not?
And as I understand it, you got married up at Pine Ridge.
Pine Ridge. I love the Lakota people. Went up there for the first time in the early 80s, and I fell in love with them and just never quit going back.
Yeah, and you were there yesterday.
That's right.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I just want you to know that as I look around the landscape of music that I care about, whether it's the Staple Singers or Johnny Cash or Clarence White or Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard, Doc Watson, Bill Monroe, all these roads connect you to those people. And it must be an amazing feeling to have lived the life you've lived already and still to be so active and engaged, but have those memories, those connections, those relationships with so many legends, so many icons, and well-deserved because you were making music with these people.
Yeah. But I got to tell you, all those roads that lead to me, they would be about that much were it not for Kenny Vaughn and Harry Stinson and Chris Scruggs. I'm telling you, it's the band of a lifetime. They're
no
brothers.
Kidding. Yeah.
They make going to work wonderful every day.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons we were able to make this happen is that we were both playing at a festival not too long ago, and I was just knocked out by the band again and just thought, man, we've got to make this happen. And so here you are. Glad it worked out.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick.
Let's get back to music. Welcome back, Marty Stewart, and his fabulous Superlatives.
I was going down the road, and this song started coming to life on the paper, and I thought, I don't know what this is, because it is really weird, but it's strange, and it's wonderful. Well, I took a little green pill, Morenci, Arizona, on my way out to sunny California. Been driving cross country for 3 long days. I was all whooped up in an indigo haze. Pill kicked in and I shut down. Then the world went a spinning round and around and around and around and around. Should have got a room in Boulder. Let me tell you about Diamond Bill Kohler and Hurricane Kate. They had them a circus tent out there in the Golden State. They hired me on as a high wire man. Well, I got a little scared, you understand? Took a pretty blue pill to settle my nerves. Thought it'd help me make them big old curves. But the pill kicked in and I fell down. Then the world went spin round and around and around and around and around. Saw flying saucers, scorpions crawling around in the hot, hot sun. Cowboys and Indians, little green men had poisonous saints all over my skin. Big Chief said, "Come and be my guest. Step across the line, then you're way out west. Way out west."
Here comes the story of Big Bill Chisholm. He saw Johnny Cash sing out there at Folsom Prison. He had 20 years left, but he couldn't wait. See, during the encore, Bill slipped out the front gate. I know more, but I won't tell. But he dealt me a mean black bill. Bill kicked in, and I locked down. Then the world went spinning. So enjoy the clean air, these great western skies, shooting stars, cactus, pretty butterflies, roadrunners and palm trees, big buffalo. Just follow your heart to where your spirit tells you to go. But if you want to come out west here, everybody, it'll give you a big thrill. It don't matter how you get here, just don't take pills. They're bad. They'll kill you. Throw you down. Well, way out west. Way out west. Way out west. Way out west.
Stewart and his fabulous superlatives. Kenny Vaughn on the guitar, Chris Scruggs, bass and vocals, Harry Stinson on drums and vocals. The record is called Way Out West. They'll be back to play a lot more music later on in the show.
Your visit to E-Town is made possible in part by Zayo Group, providing communication infrastructure services to the world's leading businesses with its fiber network that powers the voice, data, and video traffic we depend on every day. You can learn more at zayo.com. That's Z-A-Y-O.com. And thanks to our diverse family of NPR affiliates, community stations, college and commercial stations, as well as our international stations and podcast subscribers worldwide. You're listening to E-Town.
I'm Nick Forster. You're listening to E-Town. Marty Stewart and his band are going to be back later on in the show. And coming up, a young singer from New York City, Cassandra Jenkins, is here. She's going to play some songs with house band The Wildly Experienced E-Tones. But before we get back to music, you know, every week we spend some time with people who are either doing some remarkable things in their hometowns and their communities, trying to make things a little better in some way, or just folks who are experts in their field talking about something we could all learn a little bit more about, and that is certainly the case this week. Here comes Helen to tell you more about this week's guest.
Thank you, Nick. Marty Stewart's record, Way Out West, puts us all in mind of a Western landscape. Now, those western landscapes are affected by fires these days more and more every year, sometimes really big fires. Our guest this week is Michael Kotis, award-winning photographer and reporter, best-selling author, educator, and journalist who's been featured in print in the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and many others. His latest book is called Megafire, and he's here to talk about the causes, effects, and the reality of something that all of us, especially in the West, are becoming more and more aware of all the time. So please help me welcome right now, Michael Kotis.
Michael, welcome to E-Town.
Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. So what is a megafire? And are we having more of them than we used to?
Yeah, you know, some research back in, you know, maybe last 10 years has shown that since the 1970s, we've seen about a fourfold increase in the number of fires and a sixfold increase in the size of fires. So we're seeing more fires since the 60s and 70s and more big fires.
Yeah. And is that because of climate change, or what are the reasons for that?
You know, one is forest management and what we do with our forests. Sometimes it can deal with, say, harvesting timber, but a lot of times has to do with what we plant in our forests. Mm-hmm. You know, another umbrella topic is development. And, you know, we increasingly are living in flammable forests and in mountainous areas that typically have wildfires, and wildfires are part of that ecosystem. So we impact fires in those locations. And then, yeah, climate is a very big part of the fire picture, and it impacts what we call the fire regime, the way fires behave in various ecosystems and landscapes in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And this situation is getting worse. And is it worse because of those factors you mentioned, or is it also worse because of the development in, you know, tough terrain that's hard to defend in a sort of big fire that people are building in these burn areas? Is that why we think of them as being so bad?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think of it in the most simple terms, well, nobody would be concerned about these fires at all if there wasn't something at risk that we value. So if we didn't have homes or reservoirs, right, or electrical lines there, we probably wouldn't pay that much attention to them, except for the fact that it might put smoke in the sky.
Yeah.
So the fact that, yeah, we've developed into these areas and live in these areas is a huge part of the issue. Mm-hmm. But while we have these really big, bad fires, there's also a lot of science that shows that we've also had a fire deficit, as they call it, where we put out every wildfire for a century in most of this country. And, you know, a lot of forests need fires to be healthy. And so they become overgrown. A lot of species end up having to move out of those forests because they're not suitable for them to live in anymore. So one thing that I kind of challenge people to do is to kind of think about your relationship with wildfire and recognize that fire is going to happen in almost any forested landscape. It needs to happen there. And so, you know, rather than thinking about every wildfire as being a disaster, think of it as being a natural process that goes on in these forests. And we need to be prepared for that and think about how we live in these places so that we are living with fire rather than fighting fire.
Yeah. Wow. So this is an issue that we can all learn a little more about. It's not an easy one to talk about in terms of, oh, okay, so we just do this and then we'll solve the problem. It's kind of a problem of understanding as much as it's a problem of actually the fire itself.
It's a very wicked problem, as we call it. There's no easy solution.
Right.
Recent studies showed that in the United States, in the last 20 years, about 84% of wildfires were started by humans. We still have really big fires started by lightning up in the mountains and in remote forests, but the closer you get to development, the more likely that fire was started by us. Arson and, say, cigarettes thrown out the window are a minority of those. Power lines arcing on a hot day. A huge fire in Colorado was started by sparks off of the rim of a car when it had a blowout. Things like that start fires all the time. And so thinking about the fact that, you know, we're both dependent on fire as a species, and we're fire starters.
Yeah. All right, Michael. Well, thank you for sharing all this with us. Again, the book is called Megafire, and our guest is Michael Kotis. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
To our listeners, if you want to find out more about Michael Kotis, you can visit our website at etown.org. Feel free to take a moment and send us your feedback and comments about this segment or the show in general. We'd love to hear from you. You can connect with us through Twitter, Facebook, or you can also write to us the old-fashioned way at Box 954, Boulder, Colorado, 80306.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Michael. We have got more music coming up from Marty Stewart and his band in just a little while, but right now I want to tell you about our next guest. Cassandra Jenkins grew up in New York City. She has been part of a musical community that we've sort of been around. We, I think, first crossed paths in Telluride at the Bluegrass Festival. But actually, I got a call from one of our daughters who lives in New York who said, you know, I was just listening to my friend's record the other day and I thought you guys should hear it. We did. We liked it. We made the call and she's here now. And we'll learn more about her story in a little while. But very talented singer and songwriter from New York, and we're thrilled that she's here. Please welcome for her first visit to E-Town, Cassandra Jenkins.
I've been good too.
Cassandra Jenkins, welcome to E-Town. So glad you're here.
It's so good to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You grew up in New York City.
That's correct.
And as I understand it, you grew up in a musical family.
I did, yeah.
What was that all about?
My dad's a piano player. My mom grew up playing the organ, playing in a family band with her family and her great-grandmother, who's also an organist.
That's a tough band to travel with, I imagine. Just trying to think about the load in there for a minute. Where did they live?
This was in upstate New York.
Yeah, what town?
My mom grew up in Germantown.
Oh, in Germantown.
Yeah, pretty close to Hudson. Yeah. And she would play 3 church services every Sunday.
Oh, wow.
So she drove to the organs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, just trying to imagine that.
Logistics.
Yeah. So your mom grew up playing the organ and your dad is a piano player.
Mm-hmm.
Did they get together to play music? Is that how they kind of came together as a couple?
They met doing a production of Guys and Dolls in upstate New York. My mom was in the chorus and my dad was in the band. And they fell in love before long. They started a band. So that's where it started.
So when did you decide that you were going to actually sort of continue in that line but create original music and sort of become a performer on your own?
Well, we grew up playing festivals as a family, and I actually really didn't like performing. I was really shy. I had a lot of stage fright, and I was kind of a shy kid. And then I started playing in rock bands in high school with my friends, and I realized I loved performing. I loved it. I couldn't get enough of it, even though I was a shy bass player. Yeah. And I just started playing in other people's bands. I'm still doing that now. Yeah. But it was about 5 years ago I decided to start recording my own music and really start playing out under my own name. So, yeah. I've been kind of a sideman for many, many years, including in my family band. So.
Right. Well, there's no loss of dignity in being a sideman, let me just tell you. As Marty Stewart just announced, right?
Oh, my
gosh. He would be nowhere without his band. I don't believe that exactly, but I think his band is amazing. Now, you've organized a group of women who get together to sing, quite a lot of women, right? What's that about?
Yeah, the first time we got together, it was 40 women, and that was totally unexpected. It was like a week's notice. The idea was on the day of the election, I felt like I really needed to feel the support of a community, especially a female community. And I just started learning some new songs and singing with smaller groups of women. But I really just wanted to feel that force and that power of 40 women's voices in a room with no instrumentation, just full throttle singing in a circle. And it feels so good.
Wow.
I highly encourage everyone to do that. It doesn't have to be just women. The men can come too.
Well, in case you hadn't noticed, these are some pretty crazy times we're living in right now.
Yeah.
And getting together to sing seems like such a good idea. Such an easy and healing and inclusive way to bridge all those gaps, leave all that stuff behind, leave your cell phones alone.
Yeah.
And sing.
Absolutely.
Is there a name for it? Are you calling it anything?
I was calling it the Women's Peace Choir.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I know we have a lot more music to play, and it's great to get to know you a little bit. And
you too.
I know we met somewhere along the way. I'm not sure where.
Yeah, me neither, but it's really good to be back here. Yeah. I'm so grateful to be here with you and Helen and with Marty and his band, and it's really an honor. So yeah.
Well,
thank you for
I'm
having
glad
me.
Glad it worked out. Welcome, and let's get back to music. Welcome back, if you would, Cassandra Jenkins.
Everyone is in it.
Cassandra Jenkins.
Thank you so much.
Her record is called Play Till You Win. Cassandra Jenkins, along with the E-Tones, Chris Engelman, Christian Teal, Ron Jolly, and Helen Forster singing along. Cassandra Jenkins, she'll be at the very end for our big finale. Thank you.
This portion of E-Town is made possible by the Bohemian Foundation, building stronger communities through the Bohemian qualities of creativity and imagination. On the web at bohemianfoundation.org. By Silk, the charter sponsor of Change the Course. The program was co-created with National Geographic to restore water in critically water-stressed ecosystems. You can learn more about Silk's commitment to the environment and to plant-based nutrition at silk.com. By the way, if you missed some of this week's show, or if you'd like to hear it again, or to share this with your friends, the podcast of this episode and other past E-Town shows are available for free in iTunes, Google Play, and other podcast directories. Each show is listed under the names of our visiting artists. You're listening to E-Town.
Nick Forster, I want to say hello to our listeners who are hearing E-Town on stations like KCSN in Los Angeles, California, on WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana, and on KUWR, Wyoming Public Radio, throughout the state of Wyoming, but based in Laramie. And as always, if you want more information about any of our guests, if you want to see exactly what Cassandra Jenkins' jacket looks like, or just exactly how dressed up those fabulous superlatives are, all of that is on the web at etown.org. You can check the whole thing out. You can find out about how to get tickets to live shows and much more. Music is, in fact, an amazing connector. And as I mentioned to Cassandra, we were just up in Winnipeg at the Folk Festival, the classic multi-stage, multi-genre, multi-format tribal gathering. And we saw a lot of friends. And of course, the granddaddy of all those is the old Newport Folk Festival. And when you think about those classic performances there, Joan Baez, Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash, Howlin' Wolf, Doc Watson, the Stanley Brothers, Balfour Brothers, Muddy Waters, I mean, so many more. It really does paint a picture of the diversity and the depth of American music that is absolutely stunning. And in fact, 6,000 songs recorded by Alan Lomax are recently available for the first time, some of them, through a kind of new jukebox that you can read about. In fact, if you just were to search for Alan Lomax and jukebox, you'd probably find these things. But it's an incredible treasure. And what amazes me is that Marty Stewart, of course, is connected to so many of those amazing artists that he's either played with or connected with. So would you please help me welcome back to the stage, along with the fabulous superlatives, Mr. Marty Stewart.
Thank you, Nick.
My heart is sad. My soul is weary. While traveling home, life's rugged plain. The sky's dark, the day is dreary. It seems all earthly help is vain. Angels rock me to sleep.
Angels rock me to sleep.
In the cradle of love.
In the cradle of love.
Bear me over the deep.
Bear me over the deep.
To the heaven above.
To the heaven above.
When the Savior shall call.
When the Savior shall call.
And the shadow shall fall. Angels rock me to sleep. Angels rock me to sleep.
Angels rock me to sleep.
In the cradle of love. Ooh, the cradle of love.
Ooh,
the cradle of love. Angels rock me to sleep.
Marty Stewart. It's fabulous. Fabulous superlatives. What an amazing band. Kenny Vaughn, Chris Scruggs, and Harry Stinson. Latest record is called Way Out West. Folks, we've got time for one more song. I want to get everybody out on stage now for this last number. Seems as if it would be appropriate to follow that beautiful gospel song with a drinking song. I want to thank all our guests. Thanks to Cassandra Jenkins for coming out from New York City, sharing some of her new music with us. Thanks to our interview guest, Mr. Michael Kotis, who helped us learn more about mega fires, what we can all do to learn more about fire in our midst. Thanks to Marty Stewart and his fabulous superlatives. Thanks to our house band, the E-Tones, and Helen Forster. I'm Nick Forster. Hope you can be with us next week right here in E-Town.
Lady.
Well, lately I've been turning.
was recorded at E-Town Hall and produced by a donor-supported nonprofit organization. To learn more about E-Town, visit our website, etown.org. Distribution is made possible by our family of sponsors, this station, and listeners like you.
Tonight, the bottle let me down.
Marty Stewart and his band, Cassandra Jenkins, Helen Forster, the E-Tones. Thanks so much. Stay in touch. We'll see you soon.
This is a production of the E-Town Radio Network.